The Ocelli Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck Ocelli.
4/20 or April 20, 2022, allegedly according to that thing we call a calendar. And welcome to you, because you're listening to the Ocelli Effect. So that's the way it is. You might be at Ocelli.com, but then again, most of you catch it further on down the stream via your Fondle Slab of choice, your applicable application, your podcatcher du jour, etc. So Wednesday, middle of the week, Addie Ads is with us. If you don't know who Addie Ads is, and you haven't been listening to my show lately, and also you don't know much about who's out there actually doing some investigative reporting. So that's that. And we're going to get to Addie and all the places you can find him and all that good stuff. He seems to be everywhere, and definitely gave us some interesting insights when he was following up on the Maxwell trial and all that good stuff, which, by the way, I've been looking at again, because yet another documentary series comes out, and find it funny, some of the footage, and I think Addie might actually be in some of the background footage from this most recent documentary from one of the major networks. Who knows? Not sure I care, because I'd rather just go and follow what Addie's doing myself, which you can do still on Twitter. They haven't kicked him off of there completely. Let me check my mic level here. They haven't kicked him off of there completely yet, but, you know, give him time. And who knows what Elon Musk will think of Addie Ads. Anyway, maybe we'll get to that. Maybe we won't. Addie, first off, man, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, Chuck. Thanks again for having me on the show. And I hope everything's okay with you and your house, because I know you guys had some crazy storms there in Georgia recently.
Addie was scheduled the night that the lightning struck. Yeah, I was producing exactly like I was today. I was producing the Don Jeffries show. He got about 40 minutes into his two-hour shift there, and boom, that was the end of it. I didn't know exactly what happened, except there was a loud noise. I didn't see a flash because I have room darkening, panels on my windows here. So I didn't see a flash or anything, but just loud noise, simultaneously power out. And I said, all right, what happened? Was told a little bit after, hey, lightning hit your house. And it turns out that there was this massive sort of lightning storm in Macon, Georgia. And I didn't know about it because I'm in my office, Addie. I'm not looking outside. But apparently lightning struck a whole bunch of places, including where I live. So just so happened, couldn't get you on air that night. Sorry.
But All good, sir. We're just glad you're okay, Chuck.
Hey, look, one way or another, I'm here at the whims of fate. So it is what it is. But anyway, I want to get into what it is that you have been covering lately. And I know you had some ideas about going certain places. Now, I think you're back in New York right now. But tell us what's been going on the past few weeks, just with you in general, because just following Addie Ads, which you can do at, I think, now let's see if I can get your website right, oneaddieads, is it .com? Is that right?
It's addieads.one, I'm also sending people to Substack, too, because I post everything there, addieads.substack.com for both writing and video.
Okay, so addieads.one.
Yes, sir.
Website. But go over to the Substack, and I'm going to give you guys, like I say, all the links there, plus his PayPal me link, his buy me a coffee. How's that buy me a coffee thing doing for you? Is that helping? People are kicking in over there or what?
Yeah. It's been working great, and I think it's much more censorship resistant and First Amendment friendly than Patreon. I'm trying to get more people over there. But it's a problem I've noticed with this independent media movement is I'm gonna have to, I think, start working with a bigger outlet just because the long term, it's not really sustainable, I've discovered. I think it used to be. People could sustain themselves on Patreon and the like, but with the censorship, they pretty much made that. I think that era is pretty much over. So I am reaching out to people, poking my head around to see what's available. Still completely independent as of now.
Yeah, and you're also on Rockfin. And you know what's interesting about Rockfin is I just got a I probably shouldn't tell. I just got an email from them, and I don't really do any video, But they reached out to me, and they're looking to change the way that they're partnering up with independent media. So maybe, just maybe, there is a movement afoot among some of these other platforms to, be a little more open to participation with independent individuals. Who knows? Maybe that'll go that way. And sometimes these things ebb and flow like the tides. But either way, we got to keep it up and do it our own way. But anyway, all those links will be available in the discussion. So let's get down to some news. Did you know about that recent little miniseries that was put out? I think it's, what is it, CBS or NBC? Put out another miniseries again about the trial and what that actually boiled down to. And, of course, you got to go back through the history with Maxwell. And I know it's not the only thing you do, but it is one of those things you keep track of. You've also authored some things regarding this on a bunch of different platforms. But, again, the Substack is probably your one-stop shop because that's where everything goes, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, and I did see that is from Paramount Pictures and then Fremantle on Amazon Prime. It's called Ghislaine, Partner in Crime, and I'm actually in the intro of the show. You don't really you only kind of see the side of my face, but it's the first day of the trial when we're all waiting in line.
That's what I was mentioning, and because it's a Paramount thing, it's also on the CBS platform. That's why I was saying that. But yeah. Okay. Yeah, but you notice when I said, yeah, you might actually see Addie, you do, but it's hard, you know, to know exact because you're not exactly a featured player there for Paramount Network. But
right.
That's okay. So what's been going on in that regard? Because I know there's still some more news that's developing, even though hardly anybody's talking about it. And again, they did a rehash there because I did go through it just to see what it was like. Thought there was supposed to be some new information in there. Not much. The way I see it, although they did interview some of the victims on there, which not every outlet is willing to do at all. But other than that, look, I'm not trying to give praise to one of the major corporate media structures out there because screw them. But, you know, at least something was getting done there. Anything you have to report regarding that? Some new stuff, new information, anything you're looking at right now?
Yeah, not too many new developments, as you mentioned, in the Maxwell docket, other than, you know, the motion for that mistrial did get denied, and I did attend that hearing last month. Funnily enough, the big name players didn't really show up, including the journalists who broke the Jurgate story, which I thought was a little weird. But it did get denied by the court, and there was a weird happenstance where the SDNY made an administrative error. It was actually on April the 1st. It was an April Fool's joke, I called it, from the SDNY, saying that the case had been transferred from Judge Nathan to another judge. I believe his name was Broderick. I think it was Vernon Broderick. Before they switched it back to Judge Nathan, they said it was just an error. So other than that kind of fluke and then the mistrial being denied, Maxwell is going to get sentenced, and I believe that's going to be on the 28th of June. So I'll be there for that. And then I recently covered the trial of Larry Ray, who was implicated in this cult, basically a sex trafficking cult, forced labor, conspiracy charges, and he kind of had the book thrown on him, and that trial concluded the week before last. So I was covering that as well with Roberta Glass, who was there most days covering it in person. So we kind of did a tag team covering that trial.
Right. So that's interesting for sure, but it's weird how a lot of this stuff sort of went away. I don't see anybody covering the lawsuits there down in the islands. I'm not sure what's going on with that. There's a bit of this effort, I don't know, to sort of just put it to bed, but also still capitalize on it, via the corporate media who didn't want to cover it when, you know, Epstein was alive, seemed like.
Right.
Yeah, I'm wrong about that, but, and they did interview Maxwell's brother on there, of course. As you and I discussed, you know, the guy who was out there basically crying foul about the way his sister was being treated. And we discussed all this stuff that basically they show you in this documentary, except you could have heard it on my show and you didn't have to wait for their stupid TV production. So, because of you, not because of me. But anyway, moving away from that, as you wait for more developments, what else have you been covering lately?
Yeah, so I can go deeper into the Ray trial if you'd like, because it's very interesting, these sex trafficking cults, Chuck. They all seem to have ties to intelligence and really powerful people, whether it's celebrities or otherwise in business. And I'm not an expert by any means on the Nexium cult, but I saw a parallel there as well. But the Mexican drug war, as I mentioned before, I'm still following up on from afar. But as far as the Ray trial, really interesting stuff. He had all 15 counts against him were he was guilty on all of them, including money laundering, extortion conspiracy, sex trafficking, racketeering conspiracy, and forced labor conspiracy as well. And for those that don't know, he's moved in with his daughter's college roommates, basically, at this condominium, and over the course of several years put these students under a spell of sorts, got them to do various things, even traveling to North Carolina to do really tough ditch digging work, laying down pipe. And there's a photo shown of Ray actually choking one of the victims. But as far as the connections, he was actually the best man at the wedding of the former NYPD police commissioner, Bernie Kerik, who was the commissioner during 9/11. And Ray also brokered a meeting between Rudy Giuliani and Mikhail Gorbachev. He's asserted that he worked for the CIA and another U.S. intelligence agency in Kosovo, which, if true, is likely this happened during the Kosovo War, in the late 90s there. And another parallel to the Epstein network I saw was the DNC getting money from the sex trafficking. In this case, one of the victims, Claudia Drury, her name is, her prostitution money, and Drury was described by the government or the prosecution in the trial as Ray's principal cash cow. This prostitution money was funneled to a DNC social justice group, also in North Carolina. Among the list of Johns, which was released initially by the SDNY before they took it off the docket, they actually deleted it from the docket, which seems to be a regular occurrence from the SDNY. I believe Matthew Lee got that whole list, but one of the names I got was Lawrence Connor with a K and two N's, who's a Hollywood screenwriter who worked on The Sopranos. And as far as we can tell, he's the only Lawrence Connor with that spelling, K-O-N-N-E-R, who it could be, who was one of the Johns or clients of this Larry Ray sex trafficking network.
What's interesting about this always is that the only way that one of these networks really survives for a long time, they're almost always very short-lived. And believe me, it's not always powerful people that do this. There are guys that just somehow collect together a group of women at a certain point through circumstance, and they do this. And it's not always just women, by the way, but that is the majority of who is most marketable, honestly. And they get together little groups and they'll travel around the country and do stuff like this. There's a whole lot of minor rings out there that operate, right? But when you mix that with some powerful people and you get some protection, okay, which means that you're not getting taken down right away, especially because nobody wants to bust, the really prominent John and this kind of thing. Guess what happens? You get into a situation where the business grows. And some of these guys, again, and if you even think about things that are described as straight up cults, right, that are not primarily thought of as sex trafficking rings, there's almost always this aspect that comes in. Any cult you study, there's almost always this sort of industry that rises up where the women are used one way or another, either to keep the let's say the lieutenants in line, the women will be used, or the women will be used for, let's just be frank about it, generating cash. Okay.
Right.
And this often happens in any of these high control groups. But when you start to mix people of power in there, when you start to mix people that actually have the bank to back certain things up, these things get so large that they're unimaginable to the average person. You know, interstate travel, no big deal. Slave labor, Europe, of course, that always comes with it. You know, because these women don't spend all their lives on their backs. They do other work. Some of these guys will take them and run them through the strip clubs, you know, if business is kind of slow in an area. So you go and do that so that at least some cash is coming in, or maybe one of them's sick. So, you know, they can strip instead of doing that. And they keep them running. This is the reality of the dirty underground, right? And frankly, again, I'm not one of these guys who thinks prostitution in and of itself is a problem. If somebody willingly makes a deal to do labor of any kind, I say they should be able to contract for it. I kind of have that view. Some people would say it's not a very moral view. But to me, it's not about morality. I mean, we sell our time and our bodies all the time one way or another. I have no objection to it per se. But when you have people that are literally exploiting others, and keeping them trapped in circumstances, abusing them, literally taking away their life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness in a direct sense, as one type of pimp or another, this is where it gets really ugly. And of course, then this logically leads to a whole other industry, which, well, we may end up touching on before I'm done talking to you. But either way, pornography, all this stuff comes in. As part of this nexus that happens each and every time. And frankly, again, it's kind of amazing to ever get, well, the light of day on any of these groups, because we know for a fact these things operate all the time. They disappear. They reemerge. They're protected by the authorities, at least temporarily, locally sometimes. North Carolina, by the by, is one of the more friendly places for this. You ever notice that there's often this North Carolina connection from people going from the Northeast or from going from the Midwest? They wind up landing in North or South Carolina. The Carolinas apparently a little more friendly to this sort of thing, it seems like, in general. What do you say to that, Addy?
Yeah, I've never thought about that connection before. And I used to be based in the Carolinas up until being in New York recently. But what a surprise to me was when I learned last year that Charlotte's the number two banking city in the nation behind New York City. And it's not a very big city to be boasting that number two status. But Bank of America is there, and there's a lot of money in Charlotte and a lot of intellectual horsepower in the Carolinas, specifically North Carolina. I think per capita has the most PhDs in the world in that Duke UNC area there. So really a power hub, really interesting state that North Carolina plays geopolitically.
See, yeah, and you would think that a place like Atlanta would be the second biggest, you know, banking thing on the East Coast anyway, because it's an international hub. And Atlanta, I mean, Atlanta's Atlanta, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't actually have the same power, the same money behind it, or the intellectual capital that you find in the Carolinas, specifically, as you said, North Carolina. So both of these things are absolutely consistent with, well, here it is. Now, you have these intellectual power bases. You have a lot of money. What always comes along with it, whether it's Sin City, New York, or it's Los Angeles, right? Is you're always going to have the decadent things that come along with it. Higher levels of drug trade, higher levels of prostitution, higher levels. I mean, this is just, well, this is just business as usual, Addy. So, but a lot of people don't think of that as, you know, like the Carolinas as a place where, but you take a look at a lot of the trafficking cases, and indeed, you'll see Florida come up a lot. You'll see the Carolinas come up a lot. You'll see New York, no kidding, come up a lot. It's kind of interesting. And that's just the East Coast, by the way.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, again, we could go back to Epstein and talk about how, you know, where did he go after getting out of his little scrape there in Florida, right? Eventually, what does he do? He kind of plants a flag in New York. Right across the street from Bill Cosby, by the way. Okay, so, you know, interesting neighborhood over there. All right, Now I'm making jokes and all that, but I mean, this is not to be joked about because, quite honestly, again, there are a lot of people that get caught up in this, a lot of innocent victims who become part of the mechanism, whether they seem to be willing accomplices or not. That is something that is often discussed. But it's weird. I would say that for a good 20 years, we didn't really hear about this kind of thing at all. What do you say to that? I mean, the fact that this was not even covered in the minor way by, unless you were some religious cult, and then they could say, oh, they're exploiting women, or, you know, like Koresh has, you know, multiple women, and all these cult leaders have multiple women. They would tell you that sort of thing. And they would tell you that, Manson used to pimp out his girls, but they would never go into, there's guys who are not doing this like through religious concept, but people that are just doing this, what, as a business. And they just somehow have control over young women who are one way or another vulnerable to this sort of thing. And it just goes on and on and just seems to be an unending cycle. But for about, I would say, two decades, the media in general wouldn't touch it. And even our friends in the indie and alt media really didn't want to go there too much.
Mm-hmm.
It's an odd thing. I mean, what do you think about that? Was it just too much to handle for people intellectually, or what?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I think that's always going to be a factor, and I think that's one benevolent among us. I think several outcome of the Me Too movement is people are more aware of this. As much as that was, you know, kind of turned into a witch hunt a bit, the Me Too movement, and I think it did get co-opted to a large degree and kind of lost its meaning towards the end there. And especially when you look at the fact that people don't want to touch the child aspect of it, whether it's male or female children, that's why you have someone like Nick Bryant coming up with this Kids2 hashtag Kids2, because people should be as riled up about children getting trafficked, if not more so than, you know, to the same degree as women. But just going back to the Ray trial, similar to the Maxwell trial, as I mentioned, it saw connections to worldwide power brokers, celebrities, intelligence agencies, and political parties. And the two trials even shared a witness. FBI Special Agent Kelly McGuire took the stand in the Ray trial as well. When I saw that, I was like, wow. So a lot of parallels here, and even a shared witness between the Maxwell and the Ray trials. But I'm hoping, you know, people like us can get people more willing to talk about uncomfortable issues with the world like this one.
Well, we got to go there. And, you know, for years, people didn't want to discuss that part of the Franklin scandal at all. Right. Just a few of us really even wanted to focus on that book that came out, which was really well done. And by the way, it's not so friendly to a lot of people that are obsessed about the child trafficking thing because, well, this ties to the Bush people, doesn't it?
Right, right. And Barr as well, yeah.
And Barr as well. But the thing is, people didn't want to – they mentioned in the chat room over here Henry Lee Lucas being, you know, having his execution set aside and all that. See, Henry Lee Lucas was a weird case because he was copping to a whole bunch of murders that he probably didn't commit. But the idea that somebody wanted to hold off his execution because he was willing to maybe help some families get closure – I don't know if I really blame George W. or H.W., whoever it was at the time, that put aside his execution date temporarily for that reason. But Lucas is a weird character. You got to study on his own and doesn't have a lot to do with what it is we're talking about today. And the thing is that this is just the ugliness that nobody wants to touch. And in a society where we are dealing with that kind of thing, the fact that quite often it isn't the boogeyman that shows up. It is a stranger that does a lot of the bad things to children, statistically speaking, means that we've got a serious systemic problem here, which goes well outside of the great power brokers. But when you get into the great halls of power, it seems as though the sickness gets louder. So, you know, just saying, it's everywhere and needs to be dealt with across the board.
Yeah.
But anyhow, Addy, I mean, you know, you and I could sit here and discuss that, but I want to get into more of the news there. You found the common witness there. What is significant to the average listener about that who might not know Kelly and maybe not be so sure why that's so interesting and such a red flag to you?
Yeah, so you know, I kind of see it as the FBI. They choose kind of political representatives in a way to appear in court. You know, well put together. In this case, women like Kelly Maguire and Kimberly Meir was the other one, and it was especially Meir. It was like she was a teleprompter. You know, just recording or just regurgitating what she was told to say. And in that case, I think you have a perfect example of such a person in Kelly Maguire. Now, that being said, she does, as far as I know, head or is a part of the special crimes unit with regards to trafficking. So it would make sense why she would appear twice, perhaps. But it is interesting that they wouldn't give someone else, you know, the opportunity to testify. But, you know, the FBI, they don't like to take chances on anything, really. So right away, I thought that was pretty interesting, because for those of us in the know, we know the FBI is at this point very much a cover up agency, right? They cover up for the CIA and what the CIA shenanigans, you know, whatever they're up to. So, you know, the more I got into this Ray trial, which initially I wasn't that into, I was like, wow, why isn't this bigger? And another red flag for me that I noticed, Chuck, was the fact that the college really wasn't cooperating with authorities. And on the contrary, it almost seemed like they were covering up for Larry Ray. And it's like, why would they care to do that? I mean, obviously they want to do some PR control, but just another red flag when you have yet another institution kind of being an apologist for someone like this. And, you know, I mentioned in my article, if you think things aren't crazy yet, Ray also reportedly palled around with James L. Jones of Dynology fame. So this guy, he had connections to the top of a lot of really powerful organizations, similar to Jeff Epstein. And he actually, you know, faked a couple seizures in court as well twice, which I don't think anybody really appreciated or bought that those were real health episodes.
I saw that, and I wasn't sure what I was looking at because they had film of the one. I know that. I don't know if they got pictures or film of the others, but he definitely had one that I'm looking at going, this is bad, like, you know, community theater acting here. This is not good. He did not pull it off, number one. Number two, you know, when it comes to these institutions, they often want to protect themselves, you know, to protect their reputation, yada, yada. I got it. But quite often, you know, not only does the system protect itself for logical reasons, but they often want to shut things down so that it doesn't spread. Because sometimes, you catch one situation, there may be other things connected to it. There might be other guilty parties. They want to, you know, prevaricate so that they do not have it continue to, you know, grow like a cancer on them. And quite often, that's how these things usually get discovered. They're not discovered. You know, they don't catch it early, Addy. They never do, seems like. And the FBI is a not just to cover up our artists for the CIA, but for the whole of government.
Mm-hmm.
They will cover up stuff. Anything that could look bad, it just seems like, let's shut that down. And let's make sure that doesn't go any further. And, you know, the system protects itself. This is one of my favorite sayings. And that's my whole explanation for Bill Barr, by the way, which is the system protects itself, and Bill Barr believes he is the system. And it's just that simple. So this is why he does what he does. But it's interesting to me that people that are very much on one political side of the spectrum or another will tend to ignore or celebrate these things as they come out. What I appreciate about you is, you know, at first I thought maybe you weren't willing to step on right-wingers' toes. And as I looked at your work a little more, I realized that's not the truth. you're willing to go where this stuff leads and ask questions, and you may not always get the guy in front of you that you need to ask the question to, but you are a guy who asks these questions. So I love how you're looking at this, this trial and everything else, which again was undercovered by all media, including indie media. So that's why Addy Ads is important to follow. Anyways.
Thank you, Chuck. I appreciate that, sir.
No, hey, look, I'm just calling it like I see it, man. And I'll tell you something. If I saw BS from you, I would call that too, because that's who I am. But
please do.
Anyways. So I know you have other things that you want to cover as well. I mean, if you want to go further into this, we could. But, I mean, all the theatrics and everything else that went on there, you got a conviction here. It does make me wonder if there's more to the story, though, and there couldn't be more defendants, right? But because, you know, a sex trafficking ring is not run by one person. Okay, it just never is. And I always wonder about those guys. Where are their convictions? You know, where are the handlers that are actually the babysitter? Where are those guys? I don't see a lot of that happening. I know it happens on occasion, and I just followed a case in Texas that they nailed a guy for sex trafficking, a guy whose name you would never know, and nobody wants to hear about, and everything else. But they only got, like, maybe one handler with them, and I'm like, yeah, two guys don't run a ring like this. I always ask that question. Have you had that consideration regarding these things?
Yeah. And you have a similar, again, to the FC network, you know, you don't have anybody being charged with solicitation of prostitution, which is a felony, as far as I know, federally and at the state level. And again, that's probably almost certainly because of who these clients are. If it was Joe Schmo on the street or Chuck or Addy, we probably, you know, would be getting the book thrown at us. But if you're a Hollywood screenwriter or a celebrity or a power broker, there's a different level of justice for you. And some would say no justice. And I think that is something we can't really let up, you know, both with the Ray trial, but the Epstein trial too, because the Maxwell Epstein network is really the apex of this type of this government protected trafficking blackmail operation. It's really the perfect case study of corruption.
Yeah, see, and there it is. The blackmail aspect still not being really revealed in the courts. Again, theoretically, if you and I went into business and we were just two, you know, co-authored pimps here going at it, I guarantee you we'd have a lot more charges against us, and they'd be looking to hold the people responsible that owned the hotel, the room, you know, anybody who picked us up in a cab. They'd be charging everybody. If you and I had, you know, a couple $1,000 a week operation, these people have these massive networks, and you see just, you know, a handful of defendants when you know there had to be 20, 30 other people that had to participate in it. Just logistically speaking, I mean, do you think Jeffrey Epstein was minding the store for his little operation 24 hours a day? I don't think so, and I don't think him and Maxwell did it by themselves. Where's the rest of the people responsible? And again, I'm not even making the moral judgment here. Prostitution to me is not a problem. Exploiting people, making people do things against their will, literally keeping people captive, there's an issue. Underage people, there's an issue. You know, children, obviously, there's an issue. And yet, very few people in the conspiracy actually paying a price.
Yeah.
So that's something to always keep in mind. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, in terms of the numbers, too, for the Ray trial, his cash cow, quote unquote, Claudia Drury, was being pimped out at a rate of some $10,000 to $50,000 a week, totaling some $2.5 million over a 4-year period when it was all said and done. So, you know, obviously that's big money there, you know, and it's not a small operation like Chuck was comparing. If someone like us, you know, we're even doing a couple thousand a week doing these sorts of crimes.
Well, right. And there's women out there independently doing this stuff or with a manager, let's say, who are, you know, working at $2,000, $3,000, you know, a week. And you get five of them together and look, it adds up. But I mean, it's not like that. When you're talking about this high end stuff, I mean, it's a different issue. And also, you're going across state lines. There's travel expenses. I mean, there's a lot involved here. And it seems to me like there's not a lot of people paying the price for these massive networks that they prove exist in court, but don't always bring in everybody who's working them. Now, I understand that some people could be working in these networks and not fully know what's going on, but I'm thinking the majority of them must. So maybe it's just me. All right, so we can move on from that if you like.
Sure.
Get into some other issues, some other things, because I know you don't just focus on this when you're taking a look at stories. I actually wonder how it is you pick some of the stories that you do. So maybe you could give me a little insight into that and take us into another.
Wow, that's a great question. I don't think anybody's ever asked me that before. That is tough. That takes some meta-analysis. You know what it is, Chuck, for some reason I've noticed I do get into the sex trafficking stuff. The Epstein thing really was a watershed for me because I remember taking some time, maybe a week or two or maybe even longer, just processing the fact that our government and other governments were actively doing this, aiding it, abetting it, controlling it, and protecting the criminals involved in it. And the other reason, too, that I cover the Mexican drug war is more personal, I think. My father is originally from Mexico, and I've only been there once. And I just think that it's very underreported, especially when you compare it to the wars in the Middle East. The Mexican drug war has been at least as violent, if not more so, than those wars, and over the same time period too, some 500,000 dead, in the Mexican drug war, which exceeds their own, civil war, death toll. And the fact that the CIA is really orchestrating a lot of the shenanigans going on there. When you look at El Mayo being in power for about half a century now, he's been the CIA's kind of prince down there, being the boss, even ahead of El Chapo. El Chapo was kind of the front fall guy, and Mayo and the CIA took advantage of Chapo's narcissism and his need for spotlight to be that fall guy. So I think that's why I covered the Mexican drug war, and then the intelligence agencies too. I think are underrepresented, and I try to look at the pressure points of power in politics, and particularly the ones that are not covered quite as much. So, you know, when you look at how powerful the intelligence agencies are and how they really have a say in so much of the world, not just security, but culture as well, and what becomes culture. That's even perhaps something the CIA focuses on more than anything, even ahead of security, is controlling the cognitive map of the American populace. Right. So, yeah, I think that's partially why I cover those. And it was really the Maxwell trial that got me more interested in covering trials, because I'm not a lawyer. I've never really attended a trial before, so it was kind of just jumping off into the deep end. But I really loved the process, and I'm hoping I'll be able to cover the co-conspirator of Larry Ray in July. Her name is Isabella Pollock. She was kind of the Ghislaine Maxwell to his Epstein, if we want to make a loose analogy. And she was a younger woman. And so that's also going to be in the SDNY this July. And then Ray is getting sentenced at the end of September, I believe. I want to say it's the 16th at 2 p.m. Eastern at Thurgood Marshall. He's going to be sentenced, and he's facing 15 to life despite his alleged connection to the extra legal CIA. So that's good to see some justice being doled out. It's a great question.
Yeah, eventually the CIA burns every asset anyway. So, you know, you can get that protection for a time, but you don't keep it. Ask Saddam Hussein. Anyways.
Right. Right. Yeah.
But, you know, and this all ties together. Actually, there is a bit of a intellectual platform here that you're working from, and now I get it. And it makes perfect sense to me. This is where it's got to go. The pressure points are there because there is the mechanisms of government one way or another being utilized to exploit people, which, through various social controls. that wind up resulting in death and all sorts of torture one way or another. And I'm taking it that Addy Ads takes that personally. So you know what? I agree with you. So a little cap on something somebody asked me in the chat room to bring up. Well, there's also the snuff film aspect of the trafficking. Yeah, there is, and that exists. And you said in your comment here that it's only accessible to the elites. Ooh, I wouldn't say that. There is definitely a lot of stuff going on the dark web that
yes.
I don't know how to cover a lot of it. But there's a lot of horrible things that happen to people, and it's not just accessible to the elite. If you have Bitcoin, you have access to it. It's just
yes.
that simple. And I'm not trying to disparage Bitcoin. I'm saying that if you have a way to pay on websites that are not necessarily publicly readily available through most browsers, you can get anything you want.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. And don't quote me on the date, but the Italians did an operation against the snuff film ring. I think it was in 2020. It was in the last year or two, and they busted a bunch of people involved in that in Italy.
Yeah, no, they absolutely did, and I read about it in the – I think it was might have been 2021, early 2021. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, no, it was a major operation. They took down a lot of these guys, but even in the Italian news stories right away, they told you – that, quite frankly, yeah, we've taken down one. There's probably 100 more of these, you know, now. And it's just something they can't seem to get rid of, but of course they're going to keep battling. There is an aspect to that, and it's pretty damned ugly too. And, look, it goes well beyond the internet rumor about snuff films. There are real ones out there that are, absolutely horrifying. Anyway, I don't want to really go into that too much because, I'm not prepared to.
Sure.
Maybe we'll do a discussion on that one of these days. I don't know if Addy Ads wants to go digging into that as a journalist, but man, because it's one of those things that will wear on your mind if you get exposed to it. So back to the drug war thing, and the fact is that we wouldn't have the cartels, nor would we have the business that is when it comes to the Mexican side of it, really without the American intelligence agencies. And
yes.
People don't necessarily want to recognize that, even when they want to scream and cry about, you know, oh, well, MS-13. And that was a popular trope for a little while. But as soon as they started doing that, I said, yeah, more Salvatrucha. Well, gee, if you didn't go into El Salvador and Salvador and do what you did there, you wouldn't have had the paramilitary organization that becomes the street gang. Nobody wanted to hear it, Addy. They really didn't want to hear it. It's just, you know, if you don't wreck Central and South America, maybe you don't have these problems. Just saying. Okay.
Yeah.
CIA,
yeah.
And other agencies. You don't have this issue, but that's what grows. Okay. Just like, yeah, sometimes America is the best manufacturer of terrorists one way or another. And that's just an ugly truth. Again, a lot of people don't want to hear it. But, Addy, tell me I'm crazy. Go ahead.
No, yeah, that's a great point. I mean, you don't really see these problems in Russia and China because, you know, their intelligence agencies don't allow these things to happen. And, you know, that's a whole nother discussion, I think. And that's something I wanted to cover, too, with it was the – I want to say it was the November 13th attack in Paris – with the attack on the Bataclan and the French intelligence covering up the torture that happened there. And they're saying it didn't happen, even though you have the parent of one of the victims saying, actually, this did happen. But you brought up El Salvador, one of the several narco states created by principally the CIA and Western intelligence agencies, more generally speaking, and MS-13. I believe they're still under martial law. I think it's going to the end of this week. And that's because at the beginning of I think it was at the end of last month, they had their most violent 2 days in over 30 years, which left over 60 people dead, including several civilians. And as a result, President Bukele is being heavily criticized by human rights groups, asserting that his government has become too authoritarian in how it has handled it. Initially, the Western media
one thing.
Yeah.
really quickly, I want to qualify something you said, where you said it's the most violent 2 days in the country's history. Fascinating that that's true in an age when the death squads are not supposed to exist. Because there were, and if you don't know what that is, by all means, go look at the history, please. They're not supposed to be there right now. And that is, well, by definition, what they did is cause deaths. And you got more of them in this short time period here. Yes, something is very, very wrong with what's going on in El Salvador. So please continue. But am I wrong or right about that?
No, yeah, you're right. And El Salvador is not really my kitchen, but I do know about those paramilitary death squads. And, you know, they have their own cartel of violence, which has been going on. It was, I believe, their worst day of violence in about 30 years or worst 2 days. But right away, the Western media, they didn't even seem to be talking about the outbreak of violence. Instead, they took the opportunity to critique Bukele for supporting Bitcoin, and, you know, hardly even covering the status quo of the drug war there or the recent happenings there in the narco state. So as soon as that popped up, they, you know, all the Western outlets are like criticizing him for his support of Bitcoin, which has become kind of widely known now.
Really, really weird when we live in an age when I think it's Lindsay Lohan is pitching Bitcoin and celebrities are pitching Bitcoin. And yet part of the corporate media wants to point that out instead of telling you about this very long, horrible history of what's occurred in that region, in that country in particular. I mean, going back 30 years is rough. Go back 40, it's even worse. OK, and it was consistently a horrendous situation because of the politics and parapolitics that participated in the creation, the rise and fall of, and the operations between narco states. And here we go. What, you know, who are the real victims here? Is it, you know, the people ODing in America? Is it the people that are being exploited in these other countries that are producing this stuff? Is it, you know, so on and so on and so on? Guess what? All of the above.
Yes. Yeah,
and,
I agree.
You know, but let's not forget that this is not something that showed up yesterday. But yeah, they want to talk about this guy supporting Bitcoin. Great. That's wonderful. Yeah, don't talk about the people that are being murdered. I don't think Bitcoin killed anybody yet. I mean, you know, maybe somebody when it lost a whole lot of traction might have killed themselves because they invested their entire life savings in it or something. But other than that, Bitcoin didn't kill nobody. Okay, the drug war is killing people every minute of every day, whether it's here or elsewhere. So, yeah, please continue. Sorry, Addy, I just felt like throwing that in.
No. That's a great point you bring up there. And just pivoting to Mexico, Colima is seeing perhaps the worst violence it has ever seen. You know, recently a man walked into a grocery store and butchered a patron with a chainsaw, no less.
Oh, I knew
And as far as the politics of the cartel, it's being fought over by a group that splintered off of Cartel Jalisco, which is headed by Mencho, and they rebranded themselves as Cartel Colima, headed by one with the alias La Vaca. And his rival at this moment is the son-in-law of Mencho, or a Cartel Jalisco loyalist named El Charo, or the Torpedo. And even tourist hotspots like Acapulco are seeing firefights on the beach in the middle of the day. And there's a video I linked in an article I wrote where you can see tourists fleeing from the beach in a cell phone video that was captured by an onlooker. So it doesn't seem like the violence is going to end anytime soon in Mexico. On the contrary, although it's at its apex, as far as we can tell, it seems to only going to be getting worse.
Right. So with the last 10 minutes here or so that I have with you, believe it or not, we went through about 50 now. trying to squeeze everything in I can think of here with you, because I really want to see what happens if you actually travel to the border and take a look and catch things. Now, I'm not saying that you brought up your ethnicity earlier. Do you speak Spanish, by the way?
I do. It's a bit rusty at the moment, but I'm getting back into it. Yeah, I do speak Spanish, though.
You're probably going to need a little bit of that if you go to the southern part of Texas, for sure. You know, just saying, in order to communicate, because there is a bit of a blend there. I know I mentioned to you Celly Castillo last time. Definitely want you to talk to him on your way through there.
Definitely. And I bought his book, Powder Burns, Cocaine, Contras, and the Drug War, and I recommend people check it out.
Yeah, I mean, you can see why I was pointing to him. Interesting fellow for sure, and really, really sad still that he went to prison over a BS thing, quite honestly, and always happy to talk to Celly. And I hope people pay more attention to what Celly has had to say. He was featured in American Drug War and a few other things as well, but maybe some more things in the future. Powder Burns, yeah, definitely one of those books that I tell you, if you want to understand the world around you, you better have it on your shelf. Okay, so I'm not telling you that, Addy. Just so you know.
No, it's going to be on my shelf shortly, so no worries about that. And, he's great, too, because he kind of took – the fall kind of seemed to be the scapegoat a bit for the I don't know if it was exactly Fast and Furious, but for the weapons trafficking, he was kind of the scapegoat there.
Yeah, they went after him about that on his way out the door with the DEA. And because, you know, he at one time was anyway, we'll get into Celly another day because I want to finish out with you here.
Sure.
But definitely somebody, if you want to understand the drug war, you gotta check out Celly's work on it and the many discussions he's done over the years. Anyways, but, you know, I know there'll be more to it, and I'm really, really anxious to see what you come up with, because I think, again, a lot of people, and look, I'm not trying to talk down to you or anything, but a lot of younger people fail to recognize some of this history that is not all that far in the past that makes it make sense as to the strangeness that we see today. When it comes to, well, you know, gee, we have the opioid epidemic, which, again, I complain was an epidemic a long time ago, but nobody cared about it when people were shooting up an opioid in their cities and dropping dead. That was okay. But once it went to the suburbs, then it became an epidemic. There's always that. And crack cocaine, as long as that didn't come into the suburbs. But nowadays, that stuff's in the suburbs, too. Not as heavily as, say, the opioids, because the opioids are cheaper, quite frankly. So you can get that stuff much easier. It's just the reality of the time, and has been for some time. But all of it comes together. And, you know, you have to examine the government's behavior, the greater corporations' behaviors. You have to examine exactly how they exploited all these other populations in various parts of the world. And you come down to a very sickening understanding, and that is that your death, your sickness, your friends, your peoples, and peoples everywhere's death and sickness is easily monetized by people that want to participate in this. So there's that.
Yes.
There's the exploitation of people in general that you've been covering, you know, via Maxwell and everything else. But what else do you have on your radar coming up with the last few minutes here?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty much it, Chuck. I want, you know, continue coverage of the Mexican drug war. I really want to try to become an expert on that. And I have a lot of guys to study, you know, like Celly Castillo, Eon Griot, for example. Isabel Hernandez, I think, is another giant in terms of narco journalism. So that's a big one for me. I'm going to try to cover that Pollock trial in July, and really going to try to stick the landing with Maxwell and see if any other big waypoints happen, because that right after that the trial ended, there were a lot of stuff going on with Jean-Luc Brunel's death and a Jurgate and everything. So I don't think the Epstein Maxwell saga is over, even if her sentencing is on the 28th. So we're going to be covering that and going to be poking my head around as far as outlets who I might want to partner up with. That's pretty much it. I'm still, thinking about covering some more Georgia politics too, because that's something that I've been covering since I broke the Harrison Deal death and some other stuff there. And I have a good relationship with Garland Favorito over in Georgia, voter GA. He's kind of spearheading the fight for election integrity there. And obviously the villains over there are Mr. Kemp and his lieutenant governor there. So, you know, lots going on there. And, you know, if I have some time, I might try to cover my home state, Wisconsin's, election fight as well, because that's another key election integrity state there, my home state of Wisconsin.
Right. Well, you know, honestly, that's part of what I hear in your accent more than anything is that Midwest sort of weird drawl that comes out. I don't know what you call that, but that was, you know, you can definitely tell that I'm probably from the Northeast, but occasionally you'll hear that I lived in the South. But I can hear definitely a little bit of that Midwest.
Yes, sir. Yeah, it slips out.
It does. It's okay, man. And look, you're doing well. I appreciate your work.
Thank you, Chuck. I really appreciate the support, sir. I love your radio show, and you're a professional. So I love that your supporters love listening to you.
Listen, man, it's always good. And I want you to go and check out Addy. You know, while they allow him on Twitter, go there.
Okay. Please. Yeah, I've lost about 1,000 since I peaked. So hopefully that trends the other way soon here.
Yeah, let's see if we can get some follows for Addy Ads. If you're not following him on Twitter, do that. Now, you're not going to get all the information you want through Twitter. Like he said, everything goes to Substack, right? So, yep. You know, follow the Substack link that I'm going to give you with the show notes. And go there and follow his work. Obviously, you know, if you've got the ability, all of us in independent media need help staying alive and also being able to fund what it is we're going to do. And you have a show, too, don't you?
I do. Yeah, I do. I do video broadcasts on Rockfin. That's kind of where I'm sending people. I'm back up over 1,000 subscribers on YouTube, but I'm sure that's going to be, short lived. So, you know, I'm sending people to rockfin.com/addyads for all my video broadcasts. But again, if you go to my Substack or my website, it'll show my recent postings there as well.
Right, right. Look, look, don't feel bad when I say this to you, but don't expect to survive on YouTube too long. I mean, I have somehow skated a whole bunch of things where they penalize me for stuff and, you know, I don't monetize over there, nothing. And I still somehow exist, but they're constantly hitting me, taking away videos, all kinds of stuff. There's nothing I can do with it. It just sits there because it does. I mean, I give up anymore with them, but there are other video platforms out there. So I'm pretty sure you got stuff up on Rumble. You got the Rockfin. And Rockfin, you can directly support Addy. You're set up over there to take tips, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah. And Rockfin's great, too, because you can tip people after the fact, even when the live stream's ended. So, yeah, I'm really loving Rockfin. And just the fact you know your stuff's going to stay up there is really big for people like us.
But yeah, there you go. Because you refer to another. Look, you can watch my other video, and then they take it down. You know, it's like
right, right.
But Rockfin is at least at this time not doing that. So definitely, yeah, go check out Addy on Rockfin, Substack, all that stuff. I'm going to give you the links, like I said, with the show notes. And you know, one more time, man, really appreciate what you're doing, and I want to keep having you back as new stuff emerges, especially. But you're welcome back anytime. You know that, right?
Oh wow, thank you, Chuck. I appreciate that, sir. I really do. And I can't wait to meet in person next time I'm in the area.
Next time he's in Georgia, listen, if you go near Macon, if you don't go near Macon, look, that's probably not worth the trip. But if you're anywhere near Macon, Georgia, okay, just let me know, man. Look, worst comes to worst, we'll sit on the porch and, I don't know, have a smoke. How about that?
Okay, I'm taking you up on that, Chuck.
And we'll report on that on the show afterwards, too. Addy Ads, everybody. Follow him, check out his work, and I'm looking forward to what he does in the future, and I hope you are too. In the next hour, we'll be talking to Captain Trips, and I got a feeling I know where that conversation might go, but I don't use a script, people, so stick around and find out. The Ocelli Effect returns after this.
When, boy, when are you going to get your act together?
Gross.
Oh, good God Almighty me. I think he's the Antichrist.
Ocelli.com.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold.
Silver.
The stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough.
Maybe you're thinking about getting started.
WallStreetWindow.com.
Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now.
Go there now.
Go there now.
Go there now.
When a fan of the Ocelli Effect calls in to the Ocelli Effect.
I just wanted to call in and tell you and Michael Swanson and J.P. Sicily and all of the guests that you have how much I love your show. Always interesting. It's always informative. I just wanted to tell you in person on the phone. I mean, I love you. I love your show. I love everything you do. I will always be there to support you. You know that.
We appreciate you so much. You have okay. No idea.
Thanks. And most of our fans just send hate mail and death threats.
Ocelli.com.
Do you like history, real history, that you were never taught in schools?
Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia.
By author Mike Swanson, with new documentation never seen before. That'll open your eyes to events that led up to this.
Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia, 1945 through 1961.
Get your copy today at Amazon.
Why? The Vietnam War.
By author Mike Swanson.
In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks. By Larry Hancock. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. Larry Hancock's book, In Denial, rips the cover off many of them. Using new files, it exposes things about the Bay of Pigs that no one has ever written about before. It shows why it really failed and why the United States did not learn from it. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. It also shows why other countries today are doing secret operations with more success. This is the book that puts what some want to deny into the light. In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks. Larry Hancock. For more information, go to larry-hancock.com. Pick up your copy of In Denial at amazon.com in digital or physical form.
This is Tony Arterburn, and you are listening to The Ocelli Effect.
Driving okay?
I think we're parked, man.
Revelation through conversation.
Second hour of the Ocelli Effect begins now at Ocelli.com. But, of course, you could be some other time, some other place listening to us. So welcome, no matter who you are, where you are, or when you are. So 420, as I speak, yeah, it is the 20th of April, and some people are celebrating and probably hitting something at the moment. Not me. I do have some THC drops here, but not yet. Not until I'm off air. Captain Trips is with me. And he hasn't been with me for a while, but you guys might be familiar with him. If you're not, you can always go back and listen to various appearances that he's made on the show. And we do call him that. I know who he is, actually. I know his identity and a whole bunch of other things about him. But so he's a real guy. He's not some, like, you know, fake bot out there on the Internet or anything. But who knows what I'll be accused of next. Maybe I'll have fake people. Nobody's accused me of having you being a fake yet.
Oh, well, that's good. That's good. No, I'm real, and Chuck does in fact know my Christian name and my address and all sorts of things about me. So he is not lying, friend.
True enough. okay. Well, anyway, I have no idea what we're going to discuss. I did pass you an article though that does relate to a series we did not too long ago. Where, well, it's actually been a little while now.
I was just thinking that it's been over a year, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has.
Yeah.
since I did the psilocybin experiment on myself, and I'll say it again, I think I would have died by now. I really do. If I had not done it, cause I was just on a decline because PTSD was just crushing me. And over time, what have I seen? More and more articles coming out where they're studying magic mushrooms and the use of them now, mostly for depression.
Yeah.
But I also know that the Pentagon has put aside some money because they want to study it for PTSD, as they should. And got to tell you, I'm not one of these guys going to tell you that it's the miracle of all time. It used to drive me crazy when somebody would discover a drug, which, by the way, this is not a drug, but they would discover a substance, let's say. And then they would swear by it, and they would become obsessed by it. I mean, I even knew guys that were very much into cannabis before that was fashionable, and they would tell you that it was like the cure-all for every single thing in the world. As we do find out, it is medicinal, but maybe it doesn't cure everything. Okay, just saying. You know, but cannabis can be helpful.
Oh, yeah.
But it wasn't all that helpful to me. So anyway. You can look back on the special series. We did three different shows on it, actually. One about before taking the psilocybin, one about taking it, and one about what the results were. And still to this day, many, many months later, I'm in way better shape than I was before. Not going to say that it cured everything that was ailing me, but it's made life survivable for me. So I would look back at those episodes if you don't know about them, because I think they're extremely instructive. And no, I don't give anybody any sort of formula. No. I do not tell anyone to do this. I merely describe my own experiences and tell you that it was definitely a savior for me. Now, does that mean it'll work for you? I don't know. Everybody's different, but I think it's definitely worth a try.
Just getting to what you were saying there, you and I have talked about, you know, different other medicinal things. Kratom is a perfect example. I think you and I have talked about that, where it really literally did nothing for you. I, on the other hand, have used it myself and have had some success with it. So, unfortunately, we still inhabit this culture where everyone's looking for the magic pill, and it doesn't exist. You know, there are some people who are helped quite a bit by, you know, allopathic, you know, Rockefeller medicine and an antidepressant. I have known people who have gotten on a big pharma antidepressant and it has saved their lives. I've known a lot more who've gotten on it and it's ruined something or caused a lot more problems than it helped. But, you know, it's important just to keep in mind that, you know, there is no magic pill for each person. And no, to confirm what Chuck said, the series that he and I did is definitely not medical advice, and there were no prescriptions given, no dosages, no amounts, no anything. It was all simply about the personal experience of that he had with it.
Right.
And how successful it was. So, but I do encourage people to, you know, unlike the, what is it, the Atlantic or the New York Times that says don't do your own research, I do encourage you to do your own research. There's a lot out there. In fact, I was just looking because I read most of the article that you sent me, and it actually links to a mainstream study in Nature. And, they have been for at least the last 10 years, if not longer, had a lot of success with psilocybin and I think mescaline with PTSD. Mm-hmm. And it does for some people. It's very interesting how they're. I like the article you sent me because it really does break it down. It cuts through all the medical jargon, mm-hmm. and really gives a good explanation of what it seems that that psilocybin's doing in the brain that antidepressants are not doing. Right. So I'm very glad to see that it's getting some more attention again, because there are some people that are helped tremendously.
Right. And depression is certainly part of the PTSD equation, and sometimes vice versa. So it does seem logical to me that, you know, anything that would help with depression would also maybe be a path to assisting somebody who is suffering from a literal post-traumatic stress disorder. Because I think it's an overused term at this point, you know, where people are like, oh, I had, you know, this horrible thing happen to me. Now I have PTSD. It's a bit much because I experienced it way differently than just, you know what, I've got this bad memory of something.
yes, you did.
It really became something other, and it is formative and deformative to the individual. So. I urge anybody that if you can find relief without doing further harm to yourself in any which way, I suggest go ahead and reach out to whatever that is, which, by the way, is why I've been doing that series with Christy. Have you caught any of those with her?
I have caught some of them. I've been very, very behind on my podcast listening. I have to be honest. I have caught some of them. I want to go back. I have them all. I do intend to go back and listen to them.
No problem. You know, back to that other thing you were talking about with, you know, kratom or however it is you say.
Kratom.
Excuse me. Yeah, it wasn't very helpful to me. But but then again, there are others that swear by cannabis even to get them pain relief. Mm-hmm. And it did not do – it was not useful for pain relief for me. It was useful for anxiety. Mm-hmm. But it was like putting a Band-Aid on a bullet wound, though. It really was – doing the job, but it was doing something for me.
Yeah, and it's a lot safer than some of the other things that people partake into, even if it's not fixing the problem, just providing some temporary relief. Which I mean, I'll admit it. I was a good probably $300 a week bourbon drinker, right. If not more sometimes. And it was kratom that. That I kind of stumbled upon, had heard about it years ago, you know, more of a recreational thing. And John Bush, who probably some of the listeners out there are familiar with, does a lot of work with Derek Bros. He's a I don't want to use the word dealer, but he has an internet shop where he sells kratom and some different CBD products. And I don't remember what I was listening. He was speaking to someone, I don't know, and I said, yeah, I've heard about this before. Let me look into it. And, it helped me. You know, I've been dry for going on 2 years. And, you know, it was, you know, a lot of things. Again, nothing is a magic pill, but, kratom does seem to fill, it acts on some of the same receptors as opioids do. It's not an opioid. It has some of the same, alkaloids, but not the addictive ones and not the big ones that I've never gotten any type of quote unquote high off of it. But no, it helped quite a bit to, you know, quell cravings and, you know, whether it was a placebo effect and it was just drinking something that is definitely an acquired taste. I don't know, but it did work.
Well, in the future, I hope that you'll take a listen to the rest of the episodes with Chris.
Yeah, I will.
You know, it's very interesting. You are kind of in a strange spot with me because you're one of these guys who has participated in allopathic medicine, but you also recognize the value in natural medicine. So, you know, to me, it's like this is kind of where my headset is usually at. I'm not all mm-hmm. in. I'm definitely not all in on allopathic medicine. I mean, basically, no. As I've described to you, I feel as though unless you need a battlefield medic, that is about what allopathic medicine is good for. Now, when it comes to, you know, taking care of oneself, a lot of those answers are very much available to you in nature. You just have to recognize them and be able to find the correct solution for you. Yeah. So, but I do want to hear what your thoughts are on some of the shows that I've done with her because we started broaching depression last night, actually.
Okay. I'll start with that one.
Eventually, by the way, we're going to wind up discussing psilocybin stuff there, too. Not because I'm obsessing on this or anything, but it's just that, look – anything, especially if nature offers it, that is a solution for you to better your life, to better your existence, to give you the ability to breathe, to give you the ability to function better, I see no problem with utilizing it. And look, if it's been provided, why not take advantage of it?
No, exactly.
And somebody to repackage, recreate the, you know, the natural thing that maybe somebody else would have been able to point out to you in the past. So, right. Anyway,
you know, even before the last 2+ years of whatever this has been, even within mainstream allopathic medicine, there has been a lot of people making a lot of inroads with more natural, more holistic. And anyone who's interested in this, and I know I can mention this man on your show. Anyone who is follows the work of James Corbett. He did, I want to say it was in probably, he didn't have a beard actually. So this is going back, probably 2013, 2014. He did a very interesting series it was like how big oil conquered the world, why big oil conquered the world. But the other thing he did was take a little bit of a dive into Rockefeller, called it Rockefeller medicine. But, he puts a lot of things out there that anyone who's interested. In fact, this is, I think, once I get some time after my move, is going to be an area that I personally dive into, is seeing how exactly the AMA and you know, some of these big industrial, big moneyed interests really hijacked what we now know as medicine, and really changed from, you know, from more naturopathic, homeopathic things that we had in the 19th century and into the, you know, grandma's remedies, those sorts of things, and stuck us with what we have now. Thankfully, a lot of it's coming back.
Right. Corbett will be live with us next Tuesday, right before Christie's appearance, her regular Tuesday. So,
excellent. Yeah.
Going to talk to him about a few things, but I remember when he came out with that How Big Oil Conquered the World documentary. Mm-hmm. I had him on my show immediately to promote it because it was a really great piece of film and it a lot of stuff. Not just the big oil industry, but how it has influenced other industries, including medicine.
Now he believe it. And the funny thing is, a lot of what he talked about, I knew. What I didn't know was I'd heard about the Flexner report, and I'd heard about some of that stuff. But let's be honest, you're and I hate to say it, but your enemy's not going to give you the tools to disarm them. And so I hadn't had enough of the details, but you know, listening to him doing, and then, you know, certainly doing some of my own research after that, it's fascinating exactly how, you know, how the healing arts and it. You know, it really did get hijacked and led us to where we are now. And sure, you know, there are certain things about modern medicine. Like you said, you need a battlefield medic. I've had some people tell me, you know, that the only real useful modern medicine is, you know, surgeons and anesthesiologists. And I would go a little bit further than that, but there's some truth to it because those, I think, are some of the biggest advances that I, you know, that I think truly have been beneficial to society is the, you know, the ability to do surgery with, you know, with, you know, I don't want to say no pain, but, you know, not, it wasn't like it was in the Civil War where they gave you a bottle of whiskey and a wet cloth to gnaw on while they sawed your leg off. So there's been a lot of advances there. And, but a lot of the other stuff is, yeah. I'm talking from the inside, and I can talk a lot from the inside, but yeah. I won't get into it now. But, no, yeah.
But, no, and definitely we're going to follow up on all this in the future. But, I don't just turn to you for medical situations. I like to get your analysis on a couple other things because, you know, you have a way of cutting through certain things that I really appreciate. And I'm just curious, what is on, you know, what is it you're paying attention to lately? I mean, we do know that you're on top of the, you know, the vaccination issue. The fact that your industry is kind of working against you to the point where you're now getting ready to move to another location where might be as hostile to you.
Much less hostile.
Okay. In your given profession. So we know you're on top of that. That's for sure. And if you want to talk about that, we can do it. Not a problem here. You know, I don't hold anybody back, but it's what's like on your front burners at the moment in your mind.
I was telling Dave, cause you know, when he asked me to be on, I said, any particular direction. And but the one thing I was telling him, I said, you know, I've been extremely busy with personal life and work. But the one thing that I have taken a special interest in is because I'm moving, and I will fully admit I'm about to become Florida man. And quite frankly, I'm proud of it at this point. But I've taken a kind of a keen interest now in political stories coming out of Florida, and I've been watching DeSantis go just balls to the wall against Disney. And today the Florida Senate voted to, I don't know how far this is going to go, but voted to take away the kind of the special arrangement that the state of Florida had with the Disney Corporation for the last, 70 years or 60 years or so. And, you know, I don't, it's big. And, you know, I don't, I'll steal a term from Gerald Celente. I'm a political atheist as far as I'm concerned, but I will also freely admit that, hey, if a politician is doing something that I agree with, you know, I'll support him on it. And I gotta hand it to DeSantis. The guy's got balls of steel.
Well, if Florida's a weird place to begin with, because you know, you have a prominent DNC Floridian right now taking the Biden administration to court over guns and weed, basically. I don't know if you saw that story, but
just parts of it. I haven't gotten into that one yet.
No problem. But I've been in Florida to work with. See, that's the thing. Florida's very entertaining, no matter what
it is.
And here's a funny thing. At some point, we'll wind up. You're only going to be a couple hours away from me, actually.
I know. Yeah, I think Kim and I mapped it. It's a little bit over four.
Yeah, something like that. And so either you know, I don't know about you coming to my house, but I might have to drop by your place.
Absolutely. Well, you know, Nature Boy and I were talking, and my, you know, my daughter's homeschooled, and I'm trying to figure out. Right now, I'm struggling with exactly how to teach her history, because I, you know, certainly don't want the crap that's just spewed out to everybody. But one of the things I've been looking at, one of the podcasts that I have been able to somewhat keep up on is Richard Grove's Grand Theft World, and those kind of marathons. I don't know how I listen to it, but I usually over the course of a week I can get through it. It's about 6 to 8 hours a week, but. Yeah. Anyway, I'm going off on a tangent, but I'm planning on taking my daughter to visit Jekyll Island because that'll only be about 45 minutes from where I'm at. And I said, yeah, we're gonna go on a field trip to Georgia. We are, yeah, we're gonna go see Jekyll Island. What's that? So I'm trying to figure out the best way to teach her. You know, she's got to learn some of the mainstream stuff because she's got to have some understanding of what everybody else is learning, but I'm going to try to get into the weeds. She's a bright little kid, very philosophical. Unfortunately, I don't know, fortunately or unfortunately, she takes after me, In fact, tonight we started on going back to bedtime stories, and I've decided, well, you know what? I'm reading you 1984. So I've now started reading my 11-year-old 1984, trying to figure out how to handle the sex part of it. But I think it wasn't too bad. I mean, it's been a while since I've read 1984. I think a lot of it was implied more than graphic. But
I was reading Brave New World to my 5-year-old.
Yeah. So, yeah, hey, that's another one. Oh, yeah, that's a little bit harsher or heavier when it comes to the sex, since so much of that society was based around it.
Yeah, a little bit, but you know what? My daughter was very good about me explaining stuff to her like that, where I could just explain it, and it was like, okay. Yeah. Like, she got
so
it.
Was mine.
I think it's because I taught her how to read with a children's Bible, believe it or not.
I used phonics, and we had a couple of my mom found them for me, a couple of old McGuffey's readers from the 1800s.
Wow.
But yeah, she that was the one thing. She's not a big math fan, but again, I'm not either. As I got older in school, I picked up on math and I can do it, and I seem to do well in like algebra and geometry. But as a younger kid in junior, I hated math. So, but she's kind of taken after me as far as she's got more of a fascination with culture than I did. But she loves history, and so I've been doing that's where her and I work.
In that case, if you wanted to plan a whole Georgia trip, I got suggestions for you, because not only the island, but I mean, why not the Guidestones? Why not?
Ooh, that's right. Where are they? Where are they in Georgia? I can't remember. I've never seen them myself.
You got to look exactly. I don't know the place off the top of my head. I would definitely, but Google will show you.
can you actually get to them? As far as, are they more or less open to the public?
Well, they had some of them covered up the last time I
wonder
saw.
Why.
Yeah, somebody went there and took pictures, and they had part of it covered up. But still an interesting site to visit.
Yeah,
could go to the King Center in Atlanta if you wanted to, because the King family runs the. You know, if you want to learn about that part,
That would be interesting. That would be interesting.
You come to if you come around to where I am. You could come and see probably Tyler Perry filming something. He keeps shutting down parts of Macon to film over here. This was the site of a World's Fair at one point, Macon, Georgia.
Really? Really? I didn't know that.
And there's a cemetery not too far from me where a bunch of very interesting people, Allman Brothers and stuff like that, are buried. Rose Hill Cemetery, if you look that up, there's a lot of interesting history there in the graveyard, believe it or not. I know it sounds
not at all. There's a lot of I want at some point in time I'd like to take her to New Orleans. The last time I was in New Orleans was 2002, and I haven't had the heart to go back after Katrina, just for fear that it's not going to be the New Orleans I remember.
Not too far from me again is also an area of tribal land where the Creek Indians are.
Oh, and, interesting.
They have a sacred spring, which, by the way, the water smells a little funny, but I assure you it's very good for you. And they let you go there with containers and take water. So
cool.
I would
clearly do that,
Yeah, bring one of those, like, water cooler-sized bottles and yourself 5 gallons of it. You can go throughout most of the place. I think it's only like a couple of dollars that they ask for you to go and trample all over their trails. The sacred spring you can go to for nothing. And they are the people that cursed the land against the people who took it from them. Okay.
I can't say that I blame them.
No, not at all. But they have an interesting visitor center, which contains a whole lot of historical artifacts and stuff.
She would love that.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm just saying, you could plan a trip just based on some of the stuff I know about.
We'll have to do that. Yeah, because I think Kim and I both looked at it. You're going to be, like, 4 hours and some change from me, so much better than where we are now. We might have to make a group effort. Bring your crew and my crew and and do some of the Georgia sites. She's my daughter's looking forward to going to St. Augustine, which I absolutely love. I'm going to be about, I think, maybe 25 minutes from, yeah, because I'm going to the Jacksonville. I don't care. I'm going to be in the Jacksonville area. I'm going to be living in Jacksonville Beach, right on the kind of the line between Punta Verde Beach and Jacksonville Beach. So I'm about 20 miles outside of the city of Jacksonville. And I think about 25 miles from St. Augustine, but St. Augustine's fascinating if you've never been there, because that was one of the first European settlements. Which was it Ponce de Leon, or I can't remember which Spanish conquistador, was there.
I think De Leon went through.
It might have been De Leon, because he was De Leon the one that was looking for the Fountain of Youth.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I know there's they play that angle up quite a bit. It's in St. Augustine. I haven't been there in about 20 years, but I know the last time I was there, I just loved it. They have the old city set up like a lot of places do.
And Jekyll Island, by the way, does like class trips and stuff. There's mm-hmm. some high school that actually has like a sleepover out there on Jekyll Island.
Oh, interesting.
So I don't know exactly what their facilities are, but I'm thinking, it'll make that part of history accessible and interesting for sure.
Yeah.
And like I said, there's a bunch of interesting areas. You want to get a little deeper and darker. There is that area that John Collins talks about, Warner Robins over in that mm-hmm. area. Okay. If you want to go look at, some interesting architecture where there's a whole bunch of Freemasonry stuff involved there.
Ah, interesting.
And, also the, cults that, effectively started the Ku Klux Klan. Okay.
Oh, really?
From there. And don't forget, you could also go to Stone Mountain.
Yeah, I've always wanted to see Stone Mountain. Yeah, I've always wanted to, and I have always wanted to see the Guidestones as well.
Yeah, well, Stone Mountain,
I just didn't. Yeah.
Yeah, visually is just fascinating from a from an artisan's point of view. Mm-hmm. It's just amazing the amount of work that went into that thing. Now, I'm not saying that it needs to continue to exist or anything like that, but I'm just saying that.
Well, sometimes you just got to appreciate things for what they are.
Well, objectively, get a lot of the, Jesus Christ pose stuff out there, and I got to admit that art is art. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Even though there's a whole bunch of symbology built into that. And,
sure.
Of course, shout out to our late friend Jordan Maxwell. anyway,
Jordan.
Yeah, a lot of stuff there. But I'm just saying there's a whole bunch of historical points there if you wanted to kind of tour Georgia a little bit, and then also have a good excuse to stop by and, I don't know, we could figure out something to do.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Well, no, I definitely, Kim and I were talking about once we get things somewhat settled, because, one of the big things about me moving to Florida is not just the whole vaccine madness, but just cost of living. I mean, I'm in the Northeast, and I'm not going to say exactly where, but I will say I'm in the D.C. area, right. And the cost of living is just – I mean, it was bad before this hyperinflation started. Now I just watch my food bill go up and up and up and up, and, so I took this job that I'm going to be starting. And on paper, I'm taking a couple $1,000 hit just based on salary. Mm-hmm. And my wife said, "Oh my God, you're taking a pay cut." I said, No. Let me show you something." And yes, I do realize that, there's sales tax in Florida and there are other taxes paid, but I'm paying almost 9% in state taxes right now. Right. So I am getting almost a $10,000 a year raise, losing that, losing state income tax. So,
why do I live in Georgia in the first place? Well, mm-hmm. because quite frankly, even though it was going to cost me, $20,000 a year in income or whatever, I was not going to put out even, I was going to save more than
right.
that.
Right.
Living expenses. So it was like, well, why not? I ended up.
Well, just in housing alone, although housing costs have been going up in Florida, we're going to rent to start with, because I can't. I mean, even what I make here, I can't afford to buy anything here, and not what I wouldn't want to. I mean, the 3-bedroom townhome I'm living in would go for $500,000. So we got a place. We're a mile and a half off the beach. It's about almost 1,800 square feet. Three bedroom, two bathroom. It's an apartment. My wife is chronically ill, so she, like the amenities made it a little bit easier. I personally wanted to rent a house, but it is what it is. What I'm renting would have easily gone for at least $3,000 a month. I'm not trying to say that there are not high priced properties in Florida. Trust me, when looking around and you see, especially when you get down more into South Florida and the Miami area, the costs go through the roof. But,
Yeah, but I mean, when I'm looking at, I can rent four of these houses in New Jersey for, like in other words, the same price that I would pay in New Jersey, I can rent four houses in my neighborhood.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned Jersey. One of my colleagues is from Jersey, and he's talking about relocating. And I was, one of the things was, I'm saying it's going to be cheaper for you in Jersey. And he actually showed me some stuff, and I said, well, damn. So yeah, even compared to New Jersey, the DC area is ridiculous.
Right. And that's scary because
Jersey.
Well, what he doesn't probably know is that his car insurance will be an outrageous rate. And things he probably doesn't know.
He's a young guy, and he's one of these, he's one of these true believers in the system. So I just sometimes pat him on the head and say, that's nice. He means well, but he's pretty sucked into the establishment. So, yeah.
He's going to wind up there and go, where did all my money go? Because he didn't recognize that. I know you don't, you don't smoke, do you?
No.
Okay.
But I used to, and I do know what cigarettes cost. I think they're almost $9 a pack.
Yeah, it's probably more like 12 in Jersey at this point. Oof. And again, I even here with the increases, I can still buy two packs at a time for what I could buy for Jersey. So,
And the sad part about that is that most of that's going to the government.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, and it is a little cheaper up in North Carolina and this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I don't even know how we ended up here. But the point is that it's strange out there. And I was telling somebody the other night, I said, I went to go get tomatoes and paid $7 for four tomatoes, and they weren't even that great.
Wow.
And I'm like, this is getting out of control everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I think some people are probably going, what, you only paid $7 for that?
I know. Yeah. The cost of food and what are the shortages like? It's still weird shortages. Like I've not run into, not being able to get something. It's been more brand or, my wife and I drink a lot of seltzer water, and some of the seltzer waters we like, I can't find the certain flavors anywhere.
Right.
It's been that kind of stuff.
There's been weird stuff like that where people are telling me they can't get a certain kind of Gatorade or weird stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I go, okay, it's not that bad yet, but I have gone to stores where literally there's the weird, there's no lettuce today.
I've run into that with some most of my meat I do from ButcherBox, but every once in a while I'll want something that I didn't order or whatever, so I'll look for it, and it's been tough. Chicken, but that's of course because we're off on a let's kill all the chickens phase for this, for the next scary flu that's going to kill us all.
Chicken sucks anyway because it's weird. Chicken is weird past couple of years, so and now it's overpriced. That used to be the cheap meat,
Yes,
and
yes.
No more.
Yeah, no, I'm not a big chicken fan. I like wings. I'll be honest, and I do I'm pretty much a carnivore for the most part. So, I'll sit down and do two dozen wings by myself easily. And those have been a little bit more difficult to find.
No, you're not carnivore, though, because if you were a carnivore, then that would mean you would chill and eat fresh stuff.
That's true.
You're a carry-on eater. That's what you're dead.
It's true. You're right. No, you're right. You're absolutely right.
And I admit that myself. It's like, I do eat dead things. I get it. But you're not eating live. I mean, I guess, but I don't.
I like my meat warm, but not warm because the warm blood's just going through it.
Right. Anyway, And there is a whole discussion could be had there, but
easily.
I don't know
if
we got here again, but we are living in a strange time, man. I mean, it's just, it's getting very, very weird. You know, and I'm noticing an increase. I gotta tell you this, and I'm not trying to scare you away from my city or anything, but there's definitely an increase in people on the streets. And I'm not saying they're all homeless, but they're definitely not living in the greatest of homes if they do. And there's a lot more hustlers out there than there was even a year ago. So there's definitely an economic squeeze going on.
Oh, yeah. There was someone, and I can't remember who it was. They were in the Pacific Northwest, and I think it was either Seattle or Portland. So one of those big Pacific Northwest stories or cities. But they were driving down the road, and they were filming. And the most interesting thing that they pointed out, and I picked up on this before they even started talking, is they were looking at, you know, basically people now living in vehicles, living in tents, whatnot. But it was astounding how many people were living in BMWs or, you know, nice motorhomes, which if you think about it is pretty scary, because these are people that were recently, you know, you would assume gainfully employed because they have a 2020 BMW and they can't afford to live in a house. So they got to live in their car, which is kind of frightening. And, you know, people that still have, you know, they still have the RV that they bought, but they can't afford to live in their house anymore. So it's definitely affecting, you know, the upper middle class, or as someone called them, the laptop class. Not that they don't deserve it, but at the same time, it's a very strange, strange time, without question.
Something to mention here is I know it's affecting people directly. I've had a couple of cancellations on memberships and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I've had apologetic notes written to me by a couple of people, saying, just can't afford to carry stuff, which, by the way, I want to say I'm very thankful for those that are continuing to stick with me, because I know it's hard. And trust me, I'm with you. It's not like this is raking in a fortune here, what I do. I assure
and when
you.
Think, when you think about how scary that is, because, you're not charging $100 a month to be a member.
These are people telling me they can't afford $7, they can't afford $5 a month because they're paying their belt. And I believe them too, the one guy who canceled with me was really disappointing because he had been there for a couple of years. And it was like, and look, just so you know, Tony, I'm not canceling your membership. Okay. I'm going to leave you there because I know where you're at. Okay. It's fine. But, I don't want to advertise that, but I'm not going to do that for everybody. Yeah. But this guy supported me for well over, I don't know, it's got to be 3 years. So I'm not cutting off your membership, and hopefully you'll quickly recover yourself and get back to being on there. But he's not the only one who canceled this week even. Yeah, it was like, wow, I was waiting to see my $6 and change or whatever. And I got a cancellation notice. So, that's what it comes down to. If you got a membership at the site, I get like $6 out of the transaction. And, it's, like around $7 or whatever.
Right.
But, if you can't afford to pay it, I understand. It sucks. Sucks for me, and it sucks for you to be in that spot. Anyways. But Tony, I'm not canceling your membership. And it's Tony D. So, but anyway, thing is that everybody's getting squeezed, and it's a strange world. And I'm getting real tired, by the way. See, Amir's in the chat room right now, and shout out to you, man.
Hey, how are you, Amir?
And, I'm glad he's doing well. He's away from the action over there in Ukraine at the moment. So I'm grateful that he and Allah are safe. But I hope they remain that way. But I got to tell you, man, they're trying to tell us that the whole reason why it is everything is up here is because of what Russia did in Ukraine. I'm getting good and sick of that.
Yeah.
It's bull. It's just nonsense.
Nope.
we're not suffering because of that.
No, we're suffering. We're suffering because of. I mean, even before him. I mean, I'm perfectly happy to blame the last few presidents and their administrations on what we're dealing with now. But yeah, I mean, it was you that we were talking about the gas, the oil prices. I mean, what you said the oil that's been was used to produce the gasoline we're buying now. Would have been purchased in the fall sometime. So. You can't blame that.
It's a 90-day lead, and that has not changed. And that's I know that specifically by being in the business. Yeah. But then I checked with people still in the business, and it has not changed. There is a time from the oil actually coming in at a certain price to it actually showing up at the pumps, and it has always been a game there. But notice something. ExxonMobil, BP, all of these companies, guess what they're not doing? Hurting right now at all. You know, it's not like, oh, our costs went up, so we had to go up, you know, just to maintain. No, their costs went up enough so that they're gaining by leaps and bounds.
No, okay. Yeah.
But are you, when you got to pay, you know, $5 to travel a couple of miles in town because that's
what are the gas prices like for you right now?
You know, because they suspended the state tax.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, they did that for 30 days here.
Yeah. Well, okay. So that's in effect here. And they got it to like $389. And $369 at like really deep discounted places. But if you go to really buy, and here's the thing, there is a difference in gasoline. People that tell you there's no difference, there is. They have different storage standards, and certain companies, despite the fact that they're generally evil, certain companies do have higher standards. I'm going to tell you now that Shell and Exxon are your highest storage standards possible, and you get the best fuel out of them. Shell, ExxonMobil, those are your top tier. And they charge more.
Yeah,
they just do. So they're probably still hovering around $4, even with the state tax coming off here.
Now, I know we're paying like, I think it went down to as low as about what you were saying. I think the lowest I saw once they suspended that state tax was about $360, $370, but now we're back up into the so anywhere from $4 to $4.50 range.
Right.
We're still not California, so I'm always grateful for that.
Yeah, it's not California, but when you go to the different surveys that actually figure out these prices, and then they tell you the national average, if you ever notice, most places that you live in are not pinned to that national average. You know, you might find yourself below it a bit. The majority of my listeners, I think, live in areas where they're below it, unless you're, you know, again, one of those people in California. Like my Wednesday night producer,
I keep telling him. I mean, we gotta somehow rescue him, get him the hell out of there.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. No.
I know it's a beautiful place, nature boy, but God, unless you can do something to rescue that state, you may have to give it up. Come to Florida, man. We have palm trees. It's okay.
Right. But here's the bottom line on it all, though. No matter what they blame it on, now they're trying to say, oh, well, you know, Ukraine was producing so much wheat. And I'm going, no. You know,
but still, we wouldn't be seeing that yet. That's the whole thing.
No,
you know, not to say it might not be a future problem. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, no, but that's the thing about this. You know, we brought up the fuel thing, but remember again that even when it comes to products that are based on other things like this, like right now we're facing an issue with corn, okay? And why? Because they're not going to suspend. They usually pull back a little bit on the ethanol and the gasoline. Again, I'm going back to the gas because,
fuel is your, you know, oil is our master resource, and anybody that says differently is crazy.
Well, that's why I hover on it. And the thing is that corn relates to it because they're putting ethanol in the gas. And now Biden says, well, look, it should help out if we leave the ethanol in the gas. Yeah, that's his talking point, but no. And now what that does is also spike up every other food product because demand is now not going to drop on corn, which is what they use for ethanol.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And look, if you know how much corn syrup is in the crap you eat, that's one thing. If you know how much cornmeal is in slightly lesser crap you eat, that's another. And hey, mm-hmm. if you actually eat corn or feed corn to animals, God help you. Yep. Guess what? All of that continues to press on the pressure points for the prices of these things. So meat is affected by this. Fuel is affected by this. Guess what? You are indeed affected by this. And it's just, oh, no, we're going to leave the ethanol in there to just, you know, make it easier. Now, if he actually suspends the national taxes on fuel.
That would help.
That would help, but will the
Democrats suspend taxes?
Well, they did propose it, but
did they? Good for them.
You know how it's going to be? You know how you'll know if it happened is if that 9/10 disappears from your gas signs.
Mm-hmm.
That 9/10 is based on the combination of two fractional by the penny taxes that are national. One is an EPA spill tax. I'm not kidding. And it's meant to be there so that when the EPA has to come in and clean up gasoline spills, that they mm-hmm. have the funding to do it. And the other one is some other kind of federal tax. I forget how they word it, but the two of them come together to make 9/10 of a penny part of the equation that has to be added to the fuel price.
Yeah.
Again, I worked in that industry. I know this. Okay. Mm-hmm. If you see 9/10 of a penny disappear from your gas signs, that means that the federal government actually put a moratorium, whether it's for 30 days or whatever, on the national taxes. Okay.
Well, you would think, given the fact that they're probably about to be routed in the fall, you would think that that would be something that they would they would seriously consider doing.
Oh yeah. But if you're dumb enough to think that the GOP is going to give any sort of relief to the general,
No, not at all. not at all. Please, no, don't. I mean, there's.
Listen, the Republicans might let you keep your guns. The Republicans might let you get raw milk. But by the way, they're trying to get raw milk into Georgia, and I hope they do. They might let you do stuff like that. They might let you homeschool. But if you think they're going to do anything to disturb their friends in the oil industry, you're out of your mind.
No, not at all. Not at all. Not at all. You know, like I said, when one side proposes or does something that I think can benefit me or benefit people, I will support them. But as far as, you know, I can't even tell you the last time I voted, although I have admitted I will vote in the state elections in 2022. National elections, probably not, but I'm gonna try this, you know, act locally thing.
Oh, wait a minute. Are you going to be able to vote, actually, going to Florida?
I am. Well, I've already decided. I promised my daughter that as much as I hate that damn mouse, I will take her there for her birthday. And I said, we're only going on one condition. I'm getting us all DeSantis 2022 t-shirts, and we're wearing them.
I don't know. You're very weird here, man, because you're going to go visit the corporate mouse, which you don't listen to short attention span DJ theater too much, do you?
No, I don't, unfortunately.
Okay, so I've got one of my favorite clips of South Park's Mickey Mouse now mixed into this.
Oh, God.
So, when he's kicking the crap out of the Jonas Brothers. yeah, I had to include that on short attention span DJ theater. So everyone's here and pop up and actually calls them the F word for gay people, too. Just saying. you know, and I find that absolutely hilarious.
I'm not going to be able to say gay, you know, once I cross the state line in Florida. I think we're not allowed to say the word now, according to some of these crazy people.
Well, whatever you do, don't go try and be a school nurse, because if you mention it, you're gone, apparently. So
funny thing is, did you happen to read the legislation?
I did.
The thing that makes me so mad about it is, one, it doesn't say anything like they're trying to, but the bulk of that legislation, I can't understand why, no matter what your political stripe is, whether you lean left, lean right, you're in the middle, the most of that was allowing parents to know what the hell these schools are teaching kids, whether you agree with it or not. I mean, really, that's where the bulk of the legislation was, to basically say that schools can't hide their curriculums from the parents.
See, there shouldn't have had to been a piece of legislation for
exactly.
that. Exactly. With number one, number two, though, there are effective things, though, that now school boards will be empowered to do if you read it carefully.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And I don't like this superpower school board crap because
no.
it's, you know.
Yeah. No, I know what you're saying. And I was taking it from the angle more of how it what the propaganda mill was spewing out was so far from what the damn bill actually said.
No, that's true, but yeah. at the end of the day, a lot of bills and a lot of things are being done on a local level that people are celebrating, and I get why they're celebrating it, but yeah. I don't think they recognize that they're basically letting the guy who shows up at the bar and is the loudest because he shows up at the bar every single day,
yeah.
that guy
yeah.
is now in charge of how you get to conduct yourself at the bar. Got to yeah. be careful. And I do mean the yeah. bar. I'm talking about a regular bar. If you let the drunk that is there every day screaming and yelling run everything, mm-hmm. that's effective.
No, you – yeah.
Not
yeah.
a lot of places.
Yeah. No, you're correct. You're correct. But – I think there's certainly – I mean, not nothing is – you know, just back to the beginning of our discussion, there is no magic pill. But –
Well, that's
but, yeah.
is, the other thing is that, you know, some people feel as though introducing your will into a broken system is going to make the system less broken. And
no.
this is also a problem. It's like, if I elect just the right senator from my
Oh, state, God, no. Yeah.
No. Oh, my
no.
God.
No, I mean, we got so much duct tape on the Titanic right now. we don't have enough duct tape.
Not well. Listen, you never have enough duct tape, but
no.
Captain Trips, we're almost out of time.
I know.
And we've just been kind of shooting the breeze here, and you know what? That's okay, because
yeah.
You know, discussing human trafficking and everything else with that in the first, you know, which look is important and needs to be discussed, but
yeah.
quite frankly, again, I mean, I just like following Addy's work because he is at it for a good reason. You know, seeks to expose abuse by the system upon the people one way or another, and exactly how people that are able to buy influence are constantly yep. getting themselves special treatment. Gee, sounds almost like part of my ethos, doesn't it? So I like Addy for that reason. I don't necessarily agree with everything he says, but I do appreciate the fact that he's digging and going after stuff. And
yeah,
even though at first, yeah, even though at first, I got to tell you, when I first encountered him, I thought to myself, he's kind of being one of these Trump apologist guys. I realized pretty quickly that he had no problem with taking a swing at Giuliani, too.
It's
like, okay, so you think the election was a fraud, but you got no problem showing that Giuliani's a scumbag, because guess what? I don't care if he's got an R or D in front of his name. Scumbag's still a scumbag.
Oh, yeah, of course.
You know,
of course. No doubt about it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm hoping, if anything, you know, that's just what people have to realize, that, you know, we all have – I mean, no matter which – you know, no matter which side of the equation you fall on, we still have more in common with each other than we have with any of these ruling elite scumbags. I don't care if they're Democrats, Republicans. It doesn't matter. You know, sure, I like some of what DeSantis is doing, but, I mean, do I think that he really gives two squirts about me and my kids? No. Of course I don't. He was smelling the political winds in Florida, and he was reacting – to the way, you know, the way his base wanted him to react. And it just so happened that at this point in history, what he was doing was more beneficial to me. I'm not going to lie.
Well, and sadly, this is another reason why I have not left the state of Georgia, because for the most part, as you know, crazy as some people think the South is, and believe me, coming from the Northeast was a culture shock coming down here.
Yeah. Oh, it is. But it is. Yeah.
The reality is that all I want out of life, mostly, is to be left the hell alone.
Exactly. And that's what the Northeast has just completely screwed the pooch on. And I'm sorry, yeah. Nature Boy, your state, I got nothing to say. But,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I really, you know, I don't care who you marry. I don't care if you want to dress like a woman, you know, or, you know, vice versa. I really don't.
No,
just leave me the hell alone. Just leave me alone.
listen, do all the drugs you want, snort broken glass to get you off. I don't care. And you know what? Between consenting adults, if you beat each other with sticks, not my business. I'm just saying, stay out of mind. Leave
exactly.
Me alone. And that's why I'm in Georgia. That's why you're going to Florida.
Exactly. Now, I will say, though, you know, keep the kids out of it. I will. You know, you do something to a kid, I don't give a shit. You're sorry for my French, but I have no problem with the wood chipper approach for these people.
No, listen, with you there. And I loved the Northeast. I loved living in New Jersey. I the food is better. I love the beach there. I love all that stuff. I love the attitude problems. I love it all. But I can't afford to live there. And also, people won't leave me the hell alone. So you know what? Georgia, it is. Captain Trips.
Pleasure talking to you. Oh, and I just want to be the first to say Ghislaine Maxwell did not kill herself. I know she's still supposed to be alive, but, you know, just to jump ahead of the curve.
Oh, well, okay. We will now put that in the can and see what happens. And Captain Trips, if the authorities come to speak to you in next week or something, it's not my fault. I want you to understand.
No, it's not.
I didn't rat you out. You chose to say that.
I take full responsibility.
Okay. Anyway, guys, the Ocelli Effect is done. I appreciate you guys. Addy Ads for being on the first hour, Captain Trips for the second, and all of you for listening, because after all, I am merely Ocelli, and all of you are indeed the effect. Be well.